LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. It's Tuesday morning, and you know what that means. We're here to break down everything in the Las Vegas sports scene. Today's lineup, I'm Case Kiefer alongside Taylor Byrne. Ray Brewer coming back from Massachusetts, where Jerry Tarkanian was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Maybe that's the only positive thing we're going to mention today on the show, because that's the only thing I'm happy about. Everything else that you told me we're going to discuss just fires me up and makes me kind of angry.
Well, I mean, we had a chance for it to be, you know, opening weekend NFL betting in town. It had a chance to be a positive thing. It just really wasn't for us.
Yeah, I still actually really enjoy it, even despite we'll get into why it wasn't positive. I still enjoyed the NFL being back and watching all the games, but I mean, this was just ridiculous. You look at our picks column on LasVegasSun.com. We'll just go with that. We won't even go into more detail for right now. I think you went 3-3, which is the leader in the clubhouse.
Mediocrity, baby.
Ray Brewer and I both are 1-4 going into tonight's game. We should say we're filming.
Where's
the
camera?
We're recording on a Monday. This is going to run on Tuesday. So Brewer and I at best 2-4 and 2-4. You're 3-3. Actually, this is the same way we started last year, but I went I think last year might have even been worse. Well, depending on what happened tonight, I think last year I went 3-3. Brewer went 2-4 and you went 1-5.
Oh yeah, I was just saying, I thought you were saying this is how I started last year.
Because I remember very specifically last year, you were 2-10 after 2 weeks.
I was awful.
Yeah, but then you heated up.
It was real bad.
So
yeah, the beats that got us, because we had, what was it, four? We make six picks on the site. We had four of them that were the same. And two of them, how did you describe this? It's the worst side beats.
The worst side
beat
of
Sunday.
I wasn't really paying attention to the total, so there might have been a worse beat on like over-unders or maybe some halftime. But as far as the sides, I was over this. I had gotten over it and was looking forward to next week. Then you brought it back up, and now I am just livid. My two favorite plays of the weekend, not only did me and you both pick them in the Sun contest, but I had some other incentive for them to win. My two favorites by far, the Panthers plus 3.5 at home against the Seahawks, who I love the Panthers this year, think they're going to have a great year, and the Packers plus 5 at the 49ers. I thought that was a little inflated because of the way the 49ers had just killed the Packers twice last year, which is impressive, but the Packers are not that much worse. They spent all offseason thinking about how to stop the 49ers. Did a pretty good job. They're down 3 with 2 minutes to go. It looks like, all right, they're fine. They stopped the 49ers at about the 40 with 2 minutes to go. Most coaches in the NFL are idiots.
Ron Rivera certainly would have punted
but
there.
A lot of them punt right there. Jim Harbaugh unfortunately trots his team out. But still, at that point, you can't do the math in the moment. So you're thinking, all right, I would rather them punt and have the Packers get the ball. But if they get it, hopefully they can just run out the time. Well, of course they get it, and there's like a 20-second disparity. They can't run out the time. So they get to fourth down and kick a field goal. There's our loser on the Packers plus 5, because the 49ers went by 6, 1 point, and kick a field goal just because they have to.
It would have been nice if they would have just gone for it on fourth down again. Like, come on, Jim, you did it once. Do it second time.
Just tell Kaepernick to run around in circles for 20 seconds.
That'll work.
Run it out. Yeah, okay, so the question, I guess, is what's worse, that beat or the fact that the Panthers pretty much played right with the Seahawks all day, as expected. We're winning, actually, the vast majority of the game, if you broke down what they were winning. The Seahawks score on a long pass. I think it was like a 60-yard pass from Russell Wilson to one of their secondary receivers, not one of the main guys. But anyways, the Panthers march right down the field, looking great, like they're going to be back on top. D'Angelo Williams is running the ball really well, the best he has all day. Breaks free. 20 yards, looking like he's going to get to the end zone, gets to the 5, and what do you know? He's carrying the football like he's never carried a football before, and someone knocks it out. Seahawks recover, get a couple first downs, and it's over. So you lose Panthers plus 3.5, too, even though because of a fumble at the 4-yard line. I mean, just another bad beat that makes us look bad, and whatever. It was terrible.
You are still clearly fired up about this. And that fumble, too, it didn't, you know, most of the time running back loses the ball, it kind of bounces around, all this stuff. When he lost, it just dropped dead, like right there
at
the 8-yard mark or whatever it was. I think the 49ers one is a little worse just because, like, they didn't need those points. They didn't even particularly want those points. They would have been happy just running the clock out. It just, the, you know, it didn't quite work out.
Yeah, I think I agree. And I am fired up, but I'm telling you, I'm used to this stuff. I would not have been fired up if I could just get one of the two. Like, why do I have to take both of those?
Yeah, at least you didn't have something like you didn't have a buck straight up play, did you?
Oh yeah, that would be
be the worst of
that's
the
why
day.
I classified a worst side plays. If you had like a money line play on the Bucks, that was the worst.
Oh man.
With the penalty on Lavonte David hitting Geno Smith inbounds. The replays clearly showed there was a freeze frame going around on Twitter to show that Geno Smith was definitely not out of bounds, even though it looked close at the moment. And so they get 15 yards out of that and kick a game-winning field goal.
The guy who was wearing the Geno Smith jersey at LVH Superbook on Sunday was happy about
that. Was that a Geno Smith jersey?
Yeah, I told you
Jets.
I saw that one. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that.
Well,
there were a couple of Jets jerseys, but there was one Geno Smith one.
And you see how bad of a day it was for me because the Buccaneers are my favorite team, and that's not even the game I'm complaining about.
Yeah.
It was just horrendous.
Let's talk about positive things. How great to have the NFL back, though. And it was overwhelming at times because there were 10 morning games. You and I were sitting at LVH where they've got, is it an 11 total screens? Because I think there was one game that was doubled up.
Yeah, 11.
Early.
4, 8.
The way they did it, because there's
three
the one,
big ones.
You say the one big in the middle, uh-huh. Two big on the wide sides,
yeah.
And then the other 65-foot screen is broken into quad boxes. There was just so much happening. Like, it's always like this, kind of the morning games especially. You'll hear somebody cheering, and then all of a sudden your eyes kind of dart around from whatever, you know, game you were watching, trying to figure out what they're talking about. But with 10 games, it was – and especially since I'm out of season. I'm out of football watching shape. Like, I'm not prepared to be overwhelmed by all that's going on. But it was great just to kind of wade into that. You and I are both in 8 fantasy leagues. And it is, as predicted, impossible to keep up with as mm-hmm. the games are going. Don't know who to cheer for, what's going on. I just kind of like wait for games to end and then basically sort it out later.
Another disaster from yesterday. So it sounds good. In the 8 fantasy leagues, I think I went going to go 5-3. But the 3 losses are, of course, in the three.
Are they in the three that we're in?
Biggest ones.
Oh, no.
No.
Biggest.
Not the 3 biggest we're in. No, the 3 biggest. I think 2-1 in the ones we're
okay, yeah.
In.
We'll let people know. We are not going to, like, break down our fantasy rosters or things like that. But Case and I did decide, since we are in 3 fantasy leagues together, to just kind of monitor with a little extra incentive how each of us are doing in that and combine the overall record by the end of the year and, you know, just see who's on top. Maybe someone will get a free lunch out of it.
And we play in at least one of the leagues next week.
This week?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, this is the one, the last chance one, where I added Peyton Manning.
Yeah, we play in that one this week.
After I just said I wasn't going to break down fantasy roster.
Yeah, I don't really think that counts as a breakdown.
What do you... I know people will – the games will be over by now, but just quick, you know, what do you like in the Monday night games? And is there either side in either one that you're really on?
Not really. I think it's like – I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this. I don't see how anyone can have really that strong of opinion on the first game, the Redskins-Eagles. I can't wait for this game. It's one of the games I was looking most forward to week one. To see how RG3 comes back and to see what kind of offense Chip Kelly's running. But there's just so much uncertainty. I mean, no one even knows what they're going to try to do, so it's hard for me to get an opinion on that. And then I liked the Chargers in the second game kind of all week. And now I don't know if I've just lost some confidence in how Sunday went or whatever, but now I still would lean that way, but I'm just not feeling it as much. It seems like I never have a good read on the Texans. When I think they're going to play not well, they come out and play great. And when I think that they're going to hang in there with better teams or play well, they don't. So I'm kind of don't know what to make of the Texans. And the Chargers I'm actually a little high on this year, or at least higher than everyone else. I think they're going to be pretty decent, like .500 team. So that's why I kind of like them. We'll see how it plays out.
All right, so that was last weekend. This upcoming weekend, big in town for a couple of reasons. And no, I don't mean just UNLV,
okay,
Central Michigan.
I thought you meant big because they could get a win.
We will both be at some sporting events this weekend. Let's talk about the more fun one first. Mayweather, Canelo, the biggest fight that could have happened, is about to happen Saturday. It is at MGM, right?
At MGM,
so
yeah.
So they switched up the pay-per-view, but same site as usual for these big fights. I know you're going to be doing kind of the rivals, all the fight week type of stuff this week, but just kind of right now, what's your take on how you think this thing's going to play out?
I'm really excited for this, and I haven't even watched the All Access specials or anything.
I've heard they're not very good.
Oh, really?
I really want to see them because I love – that was one of the – when I remembered that it was Showtime instead of HBO, I was really disappointed. I couldn't hear Liev Schreiber like describe things in slow motion to me.
And even if they aren't that good, that's kind of the way I get caught up to date with everything that happened because I'm not in the boxing world like every day. The last thing I covered Mayweather's last fight, and then that's kind of my frame of reference. Is from back then, and I haven't really kept up since they've booked the fight. I think it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. I said all along, I think that Canelo is the best challenge for Mayweather. But I guess I just won't change my opinions. I still believe that, but I still think that Floyd should be able to win. I just don't know if Canelo is going to be able to hit him enough, but it's going to be really cool. I think you saw how fast the tickets sold out, which is pretty much right away. I've had people talk to me even on Twitter that they're coming to town for it. They don't even have a ticket. They're just coming to town to be there for the environment because it's going to be crazy all week going to a bunch. I mean, there's closed circuit parties everywhere on the strip. Usually there's, you know, three or four for other, even Mayweather or Pacquiao fights or UFC fights. There's a few of them. Like, everywhere is having these huge parties. I just really think it's going to be crazy people everywhere, just really getting into it. I'm really looking forward to it. And I think the fight's going to live up to the hype, but I'm still picking Floyd.
What I think people don't realize, and I got this off of a Deadspin story a while ago, but citing, I think it's the CompuBox. Stats that show, Mayweather, everybody knows how good of a defensive fighter he is, you know, maybe the best ever. But for current guys, they just keep a stat for like how well you're able to avoid hits. And Mayweather predictably is number one up there. Canelo, number two. And so I think everybody, and, you know, I saw him land it many times against Mosley. Everybody talks about that left hook that Canelo has, and it's devastating when he gets it in there, but I think he's definitely a better all around fighter than maybe like average fan would expect, and so that's why I think maybe it keeps him kind of keeps him in there longer. Although, do you think Mayweather's ever gonna attack, or is he just gonna kind of lay back and just dodge everything?
It's a good question. I mean, based on what we've seen in his last five or six fights. Actually, the only one I've never seen in that span is the one you were at against Miguel Cotto, which supposedly had a little bit of trouble. But based on everything I've seen, you got it. If you had to guess, you'd have to say he's just going to wait back and counter. But at the same time, I mean, Floyd and his team are master tacticians. So, I mean, if they saw something that thinks, hey, we could catch this guy off guard and just come after him, I mean, that wouldn't stun me either. But I think if you're betting, you have to say that he's going to do the same Floyd Mayweather thing he's done for the last 4 or 5 years.
Do you think that's why they took the fight? Is that maybe they saw something?
You know, honestly, I think part of the reason they took the fight, this is kind of changing subjects, but the last fight with Guerrero was kind of a disappointment on pay-per-view sales, and Showtime gave him so much money. I think there was some pressure from Showtime to take the fight. And this isn't taking anything away from Floyd Mayweather. I actually think it's kind of ridiculous how much flack he gets for, oh, he hasn't fought the toughest guys and he's dodging guys, when there's guys that are doing the exact same thing he's doing, maybe worse, but because they're likable, people don't say that to him. But I do think I don't think he took this fight for any stylistic reasons. I think it was more money is what makes a lot of sense based on his persona. And I think it was probably some pressure from the pay-per-view provider.
Yeah. So while you're at MGM enjoying the fight of the year, fight of the last fight, how big is this fight? Is this?
I'd say it's going to be the biggest since Floyd De La Hoya, which was 2008, maybe 2007. So 6 years.
So we're looking at possibly the biggest fight in the last 5 or 6 years, at least hype wise, and then. And certainly the result will play a role in determining, you know, how it's remembered, how it's talked about. But a lot of excitement around town. Not a lot of excitement for UNLV football right now.
I wonder why.
It was the way I would describe it. You were out at a high school game Saturday, and I think caught wind of the UNLV score, and I noticed it on Twitter, and my response was, imagine the most comically bad UNLV performance you've ever seen. Got it. This is worse.
Yeah, and the reason I found out what the score was is because right before I went to the game, I told someone in our office that they were going to – the line had climbed back up, I think, to 13, and I told him –
Close at 14.
Okay, I told him UNLV was going to cover, and he was basically like, yeah, right, whatever. So we made a friendly wager, and then he is texting me, like, in the first quarter, or maybe it was later than that, whatever. I looked, and they were just getting absolutely clobbered. And then this is a true story, so I felt like, oh, I can't believe how bad they're playing, whatever, then. But then, like, 5 minutes or so after I tweeted that and you tweeted back at me, the announcer at the high school game actually announced the score, and I was standing on the sidelines around some, like, I don't know, people involved with the high school programs that have probably been in Vegas for a long time, and literally their response to them announcing that was just laughing.
Yeah.
And that pretty much speaks for itself. I mean, they were like, it was like 56-8 or whatever, and the guys just started laughing.
Yeah. And they, the offense never seemed like a threat the entire from the moment it kicked off. And I was with you. I thought UNLV could cover. Part of that was just based on history at home. They had done a much better job at keeping these games close. Arizona is not that good. Their offense, really good rushing, can't throw the ball, and the defense is just okay. They got two interception returns because Nick Sherry made awful, awful throws. He didn't play the entire second half. Bobby said after the game that now they're going to look at whether he'll be the starting quarterback. I absolutely believe that he will because you already kind of know what you're getting out of Caleb Herring, and it's not like he showed something in that second half where you're just like, oh, we got to hand him the reins. But I think they tried to save him mentally as much as they could, talking about Sherry, by not putting him back out there in the second half. He also had a fumble loss that was nearly taken back. He was awful. He was awful. The running game didn't have any type of momentum, nothing going. They had 69 yards rushing at halftime. Midway through the third quarter, they had 61. Kadeem Carey, who now granted, great running back, and so it's going to be, you know, you can't compare him directly, but he had 110 yards in the second quarter alone, 58 yards on his first carry, 58 yard touchdown. Like they dominated in every way imaginable. Even and the what made it comically bad instead of just really bad for UNLV was they have a history of, you know, kind of one step forward, two steps back. So Devontae Davis scores a 69-yard touchdown, immediately spikes the ball. Now, I don't think that should be a flag, but I know the rules. As soon as I saw it,
He knows the rules, too.
I was just like, oh, that was dumb. Okay, so 15-yard penalty coming on the kickoff. They bobble the extra point. So after the touchdown, get a penalty, don't make the extra point. Kickoff, because of the short yardage, comes up to the 42, and the next play is Carey's 58-yard touchdown. Like, I didn't even finish writing my updated blog post on the UNLV score before Arizona came back and scored. They just could not do anything right without shooting themselves in the foot. The funny one that everyone points to, lighting up for a punt with no punter, had 10 guys out there. If they would have snapped that ball with no one back there, that would have been the most UNLV play.
Where was the punter?
Bobby, okay, on the sidelines, dude, picking his nose. I don't know.
I actually saw, this is funny because maybe it'll happen again this week, but I was flipping channels like after we recorded the show, because I'm pretty sure I would have brought this up if I saw it. It was probably Tuesday or Wednesday last week. And some channel had a UNLV football highlight. And I was like, oh, why is UNLV getting some press? And it was because, as I'm sure you remember, I didn't see the game, but because they ran like a hook and ladder in the first quarter against Minnesota. So someone was just making fun of them and like, oh, look at what happened. Now they have even more they can make fun of UNLV.
Oh, they have plenty. They tried a it was like a swing pass back to Taylor Barnhill, former quarterback. So it was like a double pass. And he threw it essentially into quadruple coverage because the only person it fooled was the intended receiver, who broke off the route and looked completely lost.
Oh, my.
They went for on 4th-and-1, a QB sneak, and got pushed back 2 yards. Jordan Sparkman danced at midfield after getting a sack while the team was already down 17-0. And the list kind of goes on of just absurdity. And this was the third worst home loss in program history by point total. They lost by 45 45.
This was not the third or fourth best team they
played. Arizona's going to go get knocked around a bit in the Pac-12. Like, they're not, you know, this isn't some conference champion that came in here.
It's just
so deflating.
I just hope on some of those bloopers they got Houck's reactions. That was probably the best part of the hook and ladder highlight, is because they got like 11 yards or something.
Yeah, they did. They did get a first down.
They showed Houck on the sidelines like looking all fired up and clapping. It looked like literally like a parody video. It was just bad.
And they were, you know, Ray is not here, so there is a consensus in this room that they were always going to be 0-2 to start the year. So their most important four games start now. Saturday, Central Michigan, the VI consensus line, you know, one offshore book most likely opened it at 13. It is now, it's not up most places yet, but it was down to 7. And so that just kind of gives you an indication where people are leaning. Central Michigan, I know the quarterback got knocked out in the first game. So I was going to say, so maybe UNLV will get the backup. That didn't work out too well last year. I think they were 0-3 against backup quarterbacks.
I remember that.
But this was supposed to be like the first one that UNLV could feel really good about. And instead of just being 0-2, they're 0-2 by a combined margin of 109-36. Like, just getting beat down. They've scored 36 points. They have had 35 scored against them on return touchdowns in two games. That's just...
How do you not fix that after 1 week?
It's just so... I mean, but the... So, well, they were different. You know, the last week, kickoff return, blocked field goal return, and then one bad throw in desperation. Sherry was so off this game. Both of those throws that got taken back were just right to the defender. And when he fumbled, he was just kind of like bobbing around in the pocket, looking for a little space. Like, he's not that one's just sort of a tuck it away. If that was the only mistake, you could live with that, because that wasn't terrible. The throws were really, really bad. Those were like junior high throws. And I don't think they have an answer.
As we alluded to, Brewer is the one that is always super positive about UNLV. I'd love for him to be here and spin this some positive way, because it was just a couple weeks ago.
If Bobby Houck can't do it, no one can.
Yeah, it was just a couple weeks ago, though, that he was told me I was crazy for saying I bet they won't be over 500 at any point in the season. And they still have a chance if they win the next three in a row. But still, I don't think I'm crazy when they're losing 100 and whatever to 3 or what.
Yeah. And I don't feel good about this upcoming game if I'm, you know, a UNLV fan. Like, Central Michigan's not good. UNLV has lost to not good teams before. Like, that's kind of their MO. You know, there's no, like I said, they were going to be 0-2. These four games, Central Michigan, Western Illinois, then you travel to New Mexico, bye week, and Hawaii at home. All very winnable. But, man, you got, like, just no momentum rolling in. There's nothing to feel confident about. There's not even something just to hang their hat on. Like, the defense hasn't even played particularly bad. They were awful in a few plays against Arizona, but it's been... You know, the secondary, which has been like a main concern coming into the year, they've only given up one passing touchdown all year. Now, that's based on the opponent, that neither quarterback, they're both running guys and they can't throw it. So, you know, could still be a serious issue back there. But for your secondary to not even be tested and you're losing this bad, there's just
And it seemed like Brewer included were really high on selling the idea that there's no way they were going to lose to New Mexico. Well, New Mexico did something that the not-so-incredible Houck has yet to do.
They went on the road, and not only won, they covered.
Yeah, I think they were 7-point
dogs. Oh, that's right, they were dogs.
Yeah, but still, I mean, they won it. It was in overtime, but...
Yeah. Won outright on the road. Good for you.
I mean, I still think as bad as UNLV has been, I would be stunned if they go 0-3 in the next three games, because these teams are so bad.
Oh, that'd be shocking.
I wouldn't be shocked at all if they went 1-2.
Nope.
I could easily see that happening.
Yeah.
So.
Because one of them's a road game, and like you said, New Mexico's not any good, but still not at home. Western Illinois, and they've lost to 1AA teams the past 2 years. And Central Michigan, maybe the Chippewas got something.
Maybe it'll take some of the pressure off. That's not one of those 1AA teams from just near. I think it was just they were feeling so much pressure because they didn't want to look bad in front of their kids, fellow Vegas kids or people from the area. They felt like they had to defend their turf.
All right, so that's what we've got coming up this weekend. Since Ray is gone, and it's just Case and I, we got to close out with a little music discussion.
This would be interesting.
Well, two things. One, have you seen the video, What Does the Fox Say?
I don't think so.
Oh, we're going to rectify that immediately as soon as we leave here. It's kind of like the new – it's just sort of like the internet thing of the day from last week. And it's in the vein of like Lonely Island videos made by two Norwegian guys. Very solid, so check that out. But also, I saw a new Eminem video this morning.
It's out?
Yeah.
I know I heard he announced his album.
Berserker is the
song. I hadn't
heard
any of the song titles. I just know it was like a big deal last week. He announced Marshall Mathers LP Part 2. It's coming out in like maybe October.
Is he still relevant? I know he was up in the College Game Day booth. And a lot of
really?
People talked about. Oh,
no,
you did what? Yeah, he apparently was like all drugged up, because that's why everybody on Twitter was sending out screen caps and videos of him like seeming to be really high or something.
Oh wow, I need to check this out.
I just saw the video. Kendrick Lamar makes an appearance within like the first minute, and he's just hanging out with Rick Rubin. Didn't sound very good. I don't know. Like, but I'm just curious. Like, is Eminem still relevant just because of the name? Or, and I haven't heard musically from 50 Cent in a long time. Like, can those guys, and I think Dr. Dre's last thing was like, I need a doctor, which was awful. Like, can those, in your opinion, can those guys still make great music?
Well, Dr. Dre has like the Chinese democracy thing going on. He's supposed to have this album come out for like 20 years.
Forever.
Eminem, actually, I've seen, even though I missed him on game day and missed all these discussions, I've seen a lot of people argue about his relevancy. And honestly, I'm not being biased here. I thought that his last album, I guess it was 3 years ago, but I thought it was pretty good. And it had a bunch of big, it had like two huge songs. So I thought he had kind of gotten back to that point and was relevant again. But maybe. See,
yeah, that was like the bounce back one. Like his two albums ago, really bombed.
Two albums before Recovery, both were not very good. And he admitted so himself. And that's why he recorded Recovery so fast, is because he said he was going to like kind of redeem himself. And I honestly thought he did. And there were two songs that were just huge commercial successes. The song with Rihanna, Love the Way You Lie, and what was the one song that they used on ESPN for a year? Not Afraid. Both those were huge. So I thought he was kind of still relevant and redeemed himself. But now maybe I need to rethink my position because everyone's just making fun of the guy now. I'm still definitely going to check out the new album. I'm kind of excited to watch the video now. But I thought his last album was pretty decent. I think he's still at least somewhat relevant, more than 50 Cent.
All right. Well, we're going to go check out the new Eminem album. You guys check out everything in Las Vegas this weekend. For Case, I'm Taylor. Thanks for listening.